Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And we're back from Yom Kippur.
Oh, yes, we are. That's right. What a lovely holiday.
Well, for you.
Well, you know, it's a day of atonement. It's a day
Yeah, you got to atone. That means you got to renege on all your contracts.
Right, exactly. That's the way.
Yeah, that's what it was originally meant to do.
Oh.
And start over.
Lots of things starting over. My son had a birthday, so he's starting a new year, 23 years old. Happy birthday to Brett. Went out with some of his friends and the family to a dinner tonight. And there's, you know, starting anew is also John C. Dvorak, in the area of his epic and historic run as a writer for PC Magazine.
Yep.
Over kaput.
32 years of hard work and labor trying to break all the records. I did. And that was that.
Maybe, you know what they say, when God closes a door, he opens a window.
Yeah. Well, for what? So for people to jump out?
Yeah. Well, of course. Maybe when he opens a window, he closes the door or something like that. Whatever. But maybe it's something, maybe this is a jumping off point for you somehow to the next moment of greatness.
Yeah. It's a possibility.
You know, because maybe you were stuck. You were dealing with that stuff the whole time, you know?
Yeah. I think I was.
Anyway, where are we? You didn't mention the date.
The date of what? Today?
Well, you usually say.
Oh, yeah, I usually do. Today is the, what is it, the 25th of September. We're wrapping up another month.
Wrapping up another month. The end of this week will be the close of a quarter, third quarter 2018 will be coming to a close, and a pretty good year for markets here in the U.S. And kind of some interesting things happened over the last week. For example, we had the Dow Jones Industrial Average finally catching up to an all-time high, whereas the S&P and the NASDAQ and the small cap index and all the major indices in the United States were at all-time highs, but the Dow was lagging. And it finally caught up. Hit a big week last week for some unknown reason. Some hope that there's going to be... You know, it's funny because when the hope is that we're going to have some, you know, a deal with Canada or we're going to have something with China, you know, everybody gets excited. The Dow Jones goes up. It's wonderful. And when they say the deal's off... nothing happens. So it's markets.
Well, it's always, I guess it's assumed that when a deal actually happens, that's when the downturn will start because it'll all be factored in by then.
Yeah. It's all priced into the market. We saw also pot stocks getting crushed after a wild week. Tilray, TLRY, spiked up to $300 per share. Did you watch any of that?
It made me sick.
Because you didn't own it?
Yeah.
Well, after it came public about a month ago, near about, I think it was about $20 or so on the IPO, it had this parabolic move and then went ballistic. It just went crazy. One of the reasons was that the CEO was on CNBC and other shows and touting the potential for the marijuana industry. You know, oh yeah, this is a great business. There's enough to create hundreds of billions of dollars in potential sales and plenty of $100 billion valuation companies. Now, if you just take that into what those numbers mean and just mathematically calculate it, a couple of $100 billion of sales doesn't make several $100 billion capitalized worth of companies.
No.
That doesn't make any sense. But... He was very good at talking his story, making his case. He was even on, I think he was on Cramer's show, and the stock just went bananas along with many of the other stocks.
Yeah.
And I had some friends that bought some of this stock, and I wrote him in a text. I said, listen, let me just say something. Don't do anything I'm about to tell you. However, just think about where this stock is, where it's been, and maybe, just maybe, on the way up like it's going, just take a few dollars off the table. But I'm telling you, don't listen to me. That's what I told them. I didn't want them to make a mistake and blame me and all that.
Yeah, they'll blame you for everything.
Right, yeah, of course.
So you can take some off the table, and then if it goes, then it's house money.
Right.
I mean, it's already gone past 10X. So if you took one-tenth of the stock, mm-hmm. and sold it, you're playing with house money.
Yep. And then the stock came back down to earth. It's now trading at about 110.
Yeah, sounds right.
So some hanky-panky going on there. Crude oil is also on the move. OPEC and Saudi Arabia are not going to change their production. And that news took Brent over $80 and WTI crude over $72. And this is in the face of President Trump browbeating Saudi Arabia and telling them that they're, you know, you guys are pushing up the price of oil and that's not good for the economy. So we need to make sure that you have, you know, more production, blah, blah, blah. The last time he did this, it helped for about a day or so. And now it's not seemingly making any difference at all. He even today in the, did you watch him in the UN today talking?
Yeah.
Now I got to ask you something because I don't know. Were they laughing at him or not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, some of the stuff he was saying was pretty funny. I don't know. You can't tell because they mic these things depending on the network. They mic them awkwardly. I'm going to have to get a good copy of that speech and then go over it.
Well, he did say something to the effect of, hey, I've done more as, you know, we did more as our in our administration and more than any president in history or something of that nature.
Yeah, he'll say stuff like that.
And in the UN, there was kind of like just a murmur and a few somethings. And like, then he said,
brother.
Yeah, and he said, I didn't expect a response like that, but it's true. And they all burst out into laughter.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there was something funny said or if they were laughing at him or with him. I really, honestly, I couldn't tell.
Well, I don't know. If he starts throwing A-bombs out at these countries tomorrow, then we'll know what it was.
There was it was relatively awkward, but also this is a much different audience than he's used to speaking to. You know, the audience that he's used to speaking to is either the press that can't seem to say anything to this guy or his base, which whatever he says, they're cheering and rah-ing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you got to have a base.
I would encourage you to watch the video. Which, of course, depending on what side you're on, they may have just focused on certain people in the audience that were like, France was just shaking their heads. Germany was like, oh, you could see them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. And then Fox News put the speech up, but cut out the laughter. There was a piece I saw they put up, and they cut the laughter out.
Huh.
So... anyway, onward and forward, so we don't get into a political morass. Interesting stat from FactSet recently. Heading into the end of the third quarter, 98 S&P companies, S&P 500 companies, have issued EPS guidance for the quarter. Of these 98 companies, 74 have issued negative EPS guidance, and 24 companies have issued positive guidance. Let me add that up real quickly. Yeah, that's 97, 98.
Yeah.
So the percentage of companies issuing negative guidance is 76%, which is above the five-year average of 71%. So there's a little bit, something's going on here. So if 76% is the final percentage for the quarter, which is only in a couple of days, it will mark the highest percentage of S&P 500 companies issuing negative EPS guidance for the quarter since quarter one of 2016. So what does that all mean?
Yeah, what does it mean? Since you brought it up.
I don't know. I was asking you. No.
Well, I don't know what it means. It doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, I think this whole guidance thing is like a red herring anyway, generally speaking. Sometimes they say, oh, we're not going to do very well, and they do very well, and the stock goes skyrocketing. Right. They say, we're going to do very well, they do very well, the stock goes down. I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's a complete disaster.
Well, I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, there is the potential that companies are issuing negative EPS guidance, but they're concerned about some of the impact on their earnings from things like tariffs and maybe the wearing off of some of the tax benefits, or maybe that analyst expectations were too high or something like that. The second thing is that there is the potential for fewer companies to be issuing guidance because Jamie Dimon and Warren Buffett came out with this, hey, you know what? This quarterly stuff is ridiculous. Let's do it maybe every semi-annual. So maybe companies are trying to back off on the idea of coming up with guidance. So I don't know. I mean, I think there is something to be said that we are starting to see a little bit more conversation in the area of negative EPS guidance, where there was a lot and a flurry of positive guidance for some time. So maybe companies are getting a little nervous about something. But then again, we don't know how they're going to actually report if they're just sandbagging.
Well, sandbagging would always be my guess.
Yeah. It's very possible. Very possible.
But, you know, maybe this is a crackdown on, you know, every time somebody does. I think the companies are doing the guidance, right?
Yeah.
If they're sandbagging, I think they should be taken to task by the SEC.
Well, they don't know. I mean, the other thing is, how does a company really know what their next full quarter is going to be or their full year?
They have a better idea than I do.
I mean, they do. But in retail sales, for example, unless you're closing your quarter now for next quarter, so if your quarter's almost closed, retail, anything can happen.
But most of these aren't retail.
Right.
Most of these are manufacturing.
And they know what their numbers are going to be. Or there are companies like a Microsoft, which switched over to a subscription model for their, you know, cloud-based.
Okay, then let me ask you this. There's all these companies out there, SAP and all of them, Salesforce, everybody, that have all these tools, these wonderful tools and desktops and managers, and you push a button and you can see everything because the tool is looking at all the numbers and AI is telling them exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
And it shows you the trends, and you got these graphs and you got these charts and all this stuff comes up. Is that all bull crap?
No, I think they know. I mean, you know, like the sales surveillance, or like you said, the predictive modeling of what is going to be. I mean, obviously, that's what they use. That's exactly what they use. So, you know, they have some companies probably have a much better pulse and ability to predict the short, mid, and longer term numbers, right? So unless somebody comes in to challenge Salesforce, and unless the trends change dramatically for employment and of sales, they have a pretty good insight into what their sales are going to be. Amazon, on the other hand, may have a good insight into their computing business, but maybe their retail business, they have a little bit less insight, only because, even though they probably have good insight here, because, you know, buying habits can change and people could slow down in their buying, et cetera. A company like Caterpillar has orders in advance. So they know what's on the block and what they're going to produce and how much can be sold.
The same with Boeing.
Right. They know what is in the hopper. So, but there's probably some companies that are having a much more difficult time, whether it's like a biotech firm that has no idea whether or not they're going to get approval on a particular drug through the FDA or whether it's going to be postponed.
That type of company shouldn't be doing these predictive things anyway.
Many of them don't. I'm saying those companies probably aren't the ones that are going to be giving us the guidance. I mean, who did I see today?
Yeah, they have no idea.
I did see today Tandem Diabetes came out with guidance today where they increased their guidance for the full year. This company went from like $4 to, like $40 this year? Something crazy. We've owned it for a while for our clients. And we got a nice run on this. And then all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, it's getting really, the shares are getting a little bit beat up. And then they come back, they're down 5%, they're down 8%, they're up 8%. I mean, every day has been wild. And then they come out with this today, and the stock is up 8% today. They make a really cool product for I believe it's type 1 diabetes, where it's a device that actually will monitor and measure and infuse, and it works with Bluetooth and your phone and Wi-Fi, and it's very cool for diabetes, insulin dependent diabetes. Okay, onward and forward. We have a lot to cover here. So this week, Jamie Dimon, the CEO and the well-respected head of JP Morgan, came out with a comment that said, "It's not a trade war, it's a trade skirmish." A trade skirmish. So I was thinking, what other things could we call it? You know what? Because we don't want to, God forbid we say the word trade war. That's bad, right? We don't want to be in a trade war. So we could have a trade spat. That would be something that would lessen the blow of the whole thing, don't you think? It's a little spat. Or a trade disagreement. A trade game. Trade negotiation. This is my favorite. It's a kerfuffle. What do you think of that one? Trade kerfuffle.
Yeah. I think that's the one we should use.
Yeah, it's a trade kerfuffle. But in the end, here's my take on this. If it looks like a trade war, swims like a trade war, quacks like a trade war, it's probably a duck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're picking up some of that material over the Yom Kippur, I can tell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Working the cat skills.
Baruch atarana, Eloheinu. Yeah, that's it. I could have had a snare and then a cymbal.
It would have helped.
Well, helped a lot. No, but I think if everything about this whole entire process is looking like a trade war, which is a very simple thing to look at, where two countries are going to battle over each other, putting on tariffs and sanctions and taxes and barriers. It's a trade war. What is the problem with calling it a trade war? I don't understand.
Trade wars are bad.
Oh, so, okay.
So if you don't call it a trade war, then it's good.
So I wasn't in a car accident. I was in a fender bender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have the flu. I have a sniffle.
Yeah, there you go. You got it. You know got the hang of it.
Ah. All right. So basically, I just take a word that seems like it could be and dumb it down and soften it up a little bit.
Soften it up.
Soften it.
A little body punching. Yeah.
Right. A little softening. Okay. There we go.
Definitely.
Pot smoking. Good news. Getting paid to smoke pot is no longer a toker's daydream. There's a cannabis firm in Canada that's looking to hire 5 pot aficionados from across the country to sample the company's wares and get paid for it.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, I thought this was right up our alley here.
I'm getting a check.
Yeah.
What do I do with it?
Well, Toronto-based Allot, A-H Lot, which is like Andrew Horowitz, L-O-T, Allot, is offering up to $1,000 a month to 5 cannabis connoisseurs to sample various strains of marijuana. Now, I was thinking, you have some time now. You're a good writer, and I think that maybe this would be perfect for you.
It would be, except for the fact that when I'm writing, I can't get this the fine tuned edge that makes my writing has to sound like this.
Oh yeah,
and I can't get that tone in there, so I don't think I'm appropriate to do this.
You'd be too square.
Yeah, I'm too square.
Too much facts. Went to the facts. Maybe we can get Adam to do the writing. I talked with him today, by the way.
Yeah, what do you have to say?
Well, I mean, I congratulated him on his new engagement to Tina.
Yeah.
And he did it over in Italy.
So looks like it.
He proposed over in Lake Cuomo.
And that's the story.
Yeah. And he told me about his trip. So he told me about his trip. He told me about the various places he visited in Switzerland and all that. We had a good conversation.
No, oh, good for you.
So we were, of course, always saying how much we love you.
People always put that into the conversation. It always surprises me.
Is it surprise you or say,
Yeah, well, just the whom, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They said, why are they saying that?
Yeah.
If they love me, no they wouldn't sense. Have to say that.
Don't they have other things to talk about?
Oh, okay. By the way, so over the weekend, Gina decided to pull out of the low-level negotiations they were going to have with the U.S. just before the U.S. tariffs, the $200 billion of goods at 10%, and China retaliatory tariffs of $60 billion of goods were implemented. So there's some really interesting – this is really cool, I thought at least. Okay. There was some interesting discussions kind of swirling around as to the reasoning why China may not give in to the demands, may not give in to the strong arming of the United States involved with the trade. And there's a few different things, but one of the things I thought was that President Xi Jinping, he recently changed the constitution and is now president for life. Therefore, he has no political worries or credibility issues.
He can do whatever he wants.
Does whatever he wants, so he can hold out for a while and all that. Then the other thing that I thought was really fascinating was if you look back to, I believe, what year was this? I don't remember what year it was. It was way back. Was it 19th century, 18th century? The Opium Wars.
Right.
The Opium Wars with China.
Those were in the 1800s.
They lost their standing as the most powerful force in Asia. And lost all sorts of economic wealth. There was a time when during the Opium Wars, the Brits came over and kind of brought back opium, turned the Chinese on to opium, and like 37% of Chinese citizens were hooked on opium. And they did that to weaken the economy. Did you know that?
Well, I know it was a nefarious process, and it resulted in some wars, and the Brits took a lot of tea in the process. They made them take the opium, and it's a very interesting, still festering situation with the Chinese in this particular moment in history. They didn't like it.
Right, and there was a lot of trade, and then what happened is it opened up China to Western influence, carved up part of their property, if you will, or their land holdings up into foreign powers, right? We had Hong Kong was Brit. There was a few other parts. So maybe this is on China's mind. They think this is going to happen again.
Well, they have a long collective memory. Mm-hmm. I don't see how this trade war has anything to do with the Opium Wars.
Opium Wars were a trade war.
Yeah, but it was. It also had these other factors, a weakening factor of the opium itself. I don't know. Maybe. This is kind of a far-fetched theory. I'm not buying into it.
All right, give us some thought. I just thought it was interesting that maybe China was saying, you know, hey, what, we went through this once before, and even though it was a few hundred years ago, we're not going to let this happen again. You're not going to, you Western guys, we just got our country back. You know, how many years ago was Hong Kong returned to China? It was within, what, 15 years ago?
97.
Yeah, so 11 years ago. So just a thought. In Japan, for the first time, here's an interesting statistic.
No, actually, 97 would be almost 20 years ago.
That's what I said.
You said 11.
11 plus 10.
Okay.
Is it? So it's 20 years ago?
Well, 97 to 2007 would be 10, it'd be 21.
So, but
time flies.
Yeah, maybe it's on their mind. I don't know. In Japan, we all knew this was happening, right? We knew there was an age wave happening. We knew that there was a demographic shift happening in Japan. We knew that the population was aging. Remember the old Dan and commercial jokes? The old eat Dan and yogurt? Remember the discussion we had years ago, you and I, that the elderly in Japan were being kept alive or not said to be deceased because they were still wanting to collect on the Social Security?
Yeah.
They were hiding the bodies?
Yeah.
Well, we know that Japan has an aging population, and 70-year-olds and above account for 20% of Japan's population for the first time.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. Now, one of the problems you have is that with an aging population, the research shows that they take out of the economy rather than putting into the economy. Rather than growing the economy, they actually restrain the economy. The highest your spending is in the like 40s to mid 50s. That's when you have your big, you know, the biggest overall expenses.
So what they're claiming is that the burden of the social system by the 70, 80-year-olds in comparison to their buying habits and their need to, you know, sustain themselves with food and shelter, that the ratio is off, and mm-hmm. their expenses are so low and meaningless that they should all be shot.
Well, I don't know about the last part, but you were onto something for the most part up until that. Whereas this is the problem that Japan's having, why they have a deflationary spiral that they can't get out of, why they have negative interest rates that can't push inflation, even though their markets are moving up and all that good stuff. They reached, I think a recent high lately. But why they keep going back and forth into recession, why they have to keep on priming and pumping the country's the stimulus through quantitative easing, through trying to sell down the yen, keeping interest rates very low. This is something they've been doing for 20 plus years, and it's never been able to get out. Not only they've been doing this for 20 plus years or more, but they've actually recently in the past 5 years had to go even deeper negative into the interest rate environment to try to, you know, bring back the inflationary environment, and they just can't do it. They can't do it. So.
No. Well, ever since that one time collapse, if you remember when it was around in the 90s or was it the 80s? I can't remember it anymore.
There's been a few collapses.
The big one, the big whopper, the one that was the worst.
I think that was in the 90s. That's when Japan was on an all-out buying spree of every property, all the golf courses, Rockefeller Center. Remember that whole thing? It was like...
Oh, yeah. And my favorite story about Rockefeller Center, they were buying up everything. And my favorite story about Rockefeller Center is that it became such a burden on the buyers, the new buyers, the Japanese, that they walked from it.
Yeah.
They never even sold it.
They bought Pebble Beach Golf Course.
Yeah, well, that was part of a bigger scam.
And remember how we were all, Japan Inc. was the envy of the world. And we saw pictures on TV and videos of the Japanese corporations. They'd show you a car factory in the morning. They'd wake up. They'd show up to work. They'd all line up. They'd do their jumping jacks and their various meditations and all that and start work. And how the Japanese worker was the envy of the world. Not so much anymore.
Well, people who bought into that were hornswoggled.
Hornswoggled.
Yeah.
Okay, talking about next topic. I'm going to talk about nothing is safe in e-space. Nothing. Twitter now said that a bug sent users' private direct messages to third-party developers who are not authorized to receive them. The social media giant, they always say in the news, the social media giant, they're kind of a social media big boy. Not a giant anymore. They used to be a giant. The social media company began warning users last Friday, of the exposure with a message in the app. The issue has persisted since May 2017. But it's like a year and 2 months.
Yeah.
But we resolved it immediately upon discovering it. So how did they find out when this happened? But maybe that's when they went back and looked at the changes in code. The message said, which was posted on Twitter by a Mashable reporter, our investigation into this issue is ongoing, but presently we have no reason to believe that any data sent to unauthorized developers was misused. Twitter said it discovered the exposure on September 10th, but it took 2 weeks to inform users, which is another problem. So not only did they not find it to begin with, they found it, didn't tell people. It was sending direct messages to developers, and they say for some reason, however they know this, however they can say this BS, that they don't believe any data was used for any nefarious purposes. How much of BS is that?
Pretty bad.
They don't know. There's no way they could know.
I have no idea what was done with it. No.
In stupidity, we have a crypto update. I thought this was very interesting if I'm reading this correctly. Hackers are illegally generating Monero, Bitcoin, and other cryptocurrencies by exploiting a software flaw that was leaked from the U.S. government. So there's some research that says that the government had some kind of software something or other that would allow for a break into the cryptocurrencies or break the cryptocurrencies, allowing people to generate coins, like, on the fly. So, detected cases of illicit cryptocurrency mining, the digital equivalent of minting money, have surged 459% in 2018 compared to last year. It's a report from the Cyber Threat Alliance. So if people are able just to take Monero, if people are just able to create this coin out of thin air, how is there any value to that coin?
Well, not only that, but how is there any value to the blockchain, which is supposed to protect these coins from that happening?
But it's supposed to protect the coins, but does it protect from creating a coin? Well, it has to be. Well, no, but there's some kind of
Coins can be mined, but it takes, you know, an awful long time to do one.
So basically, these people that are doing this are sitting back, create. And no wonder why Bitcoin can't get any legs, because people are creating this thing and just probably selling it right away.
I would.
Yeah, no kidding. You know? And lately, I've been following some of these crypto evangelists on Twitter.
Oh, there's a million of them.
I don't know what it is with this particular grouping of people, but it's like a religion. With this whole, my God is better than your God, which means my coin is better than your coin. And they all, I don't understand this, but they all seem to want to be like apostles and philosophers. They talk with this crazy, not only crazy lingo, I'm not talking about crazy lingo, but these real far out discussions about decentralization of the person and coin maximists. And I'm like, what? And every time I replied to somebody today, I wrote, because he wrote something, this one guy. And I had him on the show recently on the Disciplined Investor podcast. And he was a pretty smart guy. And he wrote something today. And I wrote back, I said, either I'm really smart or I'm really dumb, but I have no idea what you talk about ever. And it's always about this whole, you know, third party, you know, big words with this whole weird philosophical tilt to it that, you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen these?
Yeah, I see this set of writing every so often. It's always an eye roller to me.
I wonder if I could pull one up.
It's always done just to confuse the stupid people.
Is that what it is?
What you think?
It confuses me. Let me see if I can find some here. Let's see here. Does anyone still name their kid Poindexter? What was the last of the Poindexter? Granted, this may not be interesting enough to make a Mel Gibson movie, but I'm interested in the story. Okay, that's one thing. I don't know why you have to talk about this. It's true. I tried to practice blockchain abstinence. Couldn't help myself. Now I have a legitimate tokens all over town. Probably should have just opted for a proper coin ed program that clearly outlines the risk and safe practices. Here's one. I think the fire escapes prove abject decentralization leads to trample. If decentralization was always efficiency, I'd expect the humans could be expected to emergently consent out of the fire. What the hell does that mean?
Hey, man, I think they got that part of that weed testing operation out of Canada.
Weed, that's like LSD, man. That's like Socrates on LSD.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand where they get this stuff to talk about and what is the point of it. I don't understand what the utility of these conversations are. It's a freaking currency. Does it have to be a life? Does it have to be a religious experience? I mean, can you imagine if I was, you know, praying to the stock market gods every day like these guys do? I mean, they should get a life, man. Seriously, there's something very wrong with this whole thing. No wonder why they're all crazy. They're nuts. They're absolutely nuts.
Hey, you're talking to the choir.
Yeah. Apple announced some new phones this week or last week. They're bigger in size and in price for the most part. Updated cameras, batteries, storage, and some other features. Plus, they have this new XR, which is cheaper version. But I was thinking about that. Didn't they do that before with like the 8C or the 6C?
Yeah, there was a C. It was the 5C or the 6C. I can't remember which C.
It came in all sorts of colors.
Yeah, there were yellow and there was an orange and a blue. And they were pretty. But nobody bought them supposedly because nobody wants to look like a cheapskate when you have an iPhone. So.
Right. Yeah, so these new ones are a bit, they have bigger. One of them has the iPhone X, whatever, Max, something or other. Is a bit bigger in size. It has a better battery. It has a new, faster processor. They went through the processor speed. I watched the entire Apple conference, the announcement conference from top to bottom. The script is the same as always. The clothing is the same as always. The people that are talking are the same as always. The stuff that they're, the entire tone, the tone is the same as always.
Well, they're ever going to get out of this wearing jeans?
The jeans. Oh, this, and this was, what color? The olives and the grays. It was almost like a monochromatic event.
Yeah, very monochromatic.
You know, it was like field colors. It's like apples. It's like apples. Military wear. You know what I mean? It's like they're going into battle wear. This particular, it's like maybe because I was thinking maybe they want to keep it very plain so it's not distracting. You know, somebody came on stage and wear all a flowery dress or a flowery shirt. You know, Phil coming out with like a, you know, a flowery shirt.
How about a Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah, that but that would probably detract from the whole, all the junk going on in the background.
Ah, that's actually a good observation. That's possibly, I don't think it's overt, but it does make sense that you would present yourself as just a super bland item, human item on the stage so the attention would be drawn toward the screen and not you.
You ever see those puppet shows where the puppeteers and the whole background's black, the puppeteers all in black, they paint their faces, everything's black, so just the puppets stand out?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what this is about.
Maybe.
Maybe they're just the Apple puppets.
It's the only explanation I can think of.
The puppeteers. And they're holding the and the iPhones are on marionette strings.
I think they should come out. Every one of them should learn a new skill. And everyone should come out as a ventriloquist with a dummy. And a Steve Jobs dummy. Oh, God. And just do a whole bit up there. Don't you think it'd be great?
That'd be pretty funny. Probably wouldn't go over very well, but it would be funny. Municipality costs are skyrocketing. You know, so this is something that you and I had talked about also, that, you know, the municipalities, they have these pension plans, and a lot of the pension plans have fixed costs into the future because a lot of them had defined benefit plans, and they had these really cushy deals for retirement. So there was some studies done and shows that the pension payments and other fixed costs into fiscal 2017 are the largest, I think they've been on history, and the expenses are likely to continue to weigh on budgets, according to an annual report released by S&P Global Ratings. On average, the largest 15 cities in the country, public employee pensions, debt, and other retirement benefits made up 26% of expenditures. So the cost of running a city, what you're paying your taxes on, is 26% of that is essentially some debt, other retirement benefits, and public employee pensions.
Yeah.
So for every dollar you're giving, 25 cents goes to somebody else that worked for the city maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah, he's not doing anything now.
Yeah, they don't do anything anyway. Have you ever seen people from the city?
Well, there's that.
They dig a hole. There's four people. One is working. The other three are looking.
Yeah.
Never four are working at the same time.
I've seen that everywhere around the world.
Never are three working at the same time. One guy's working, the other three, one guy's smoking a cigarette, and the other two are watching. I don't understand that whole thing there. But anyway, in order from high to low, a fixed cost as a percentage of expenditures, you would know this, but the city surveyed the top costs. In other words, the top fixed costs as a percentage of the total expenditures. We had Chicago, Dallas, Jacksonville, San Jose, Houston, Austin, Phoenix, New York, Columbus, San Fran, San Antonio, Los Angeles, Indianapolis, San Diego, and Philadelphia.
And?
That's all. I'm just telling you what it is. I'm telling you information. Oh, I'm giving you information. Okay. There was no summary on that. There was just facts being spit out of my mouth.
Well, a lot of these cities are broke.
Yep. So therefore, I have a pick that goes along with this for the game today, which we'll get to in a minute. Mergers and deals. A lot of mergers and deals announced this week. The first one that was pretty interesting, Sirius XM is said to be buying Pandora.
Yeah, I found that to be peculiar.
It seems they both need each other, because without each other, they're going to go bankrupt. And with each other, they'll go bankrupt, but maybe slower.
That's probably the Yeah, that's probably the reason.
Sirius needs streaming. They could use a good streaming platform. I have Sirius, for example, in my wife's car has Sirius Radio. So I called them up. I'm like, hey, I got that thing. Can I, like, do you have an app? Do you have something? There's something they talked about, but not really. You have to pay extra for it. I would love to have that Sirius, like, you know, the 60s channel, the 70s channel. So what was interesting was it was an all stock deal. And when the deal was announced, Sirius was down like 8%. Pandora was up like 5, 6%. Then Pandora came down. By the end of the day, Pandora was negative. Huh. When's the last time you remember an acquiring company and the acquired company both down on the news that a company's buying them?
Yeah, that's a good one, I have to say.
Right?
Yeah, it's very, very funny.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Comcast wins the bidding war to buy Sky with some little fine print there, what they can have to get rid of it all. Michael Kors seems to be buying Versace. Randgold Resources is going to be buying or merging with Canada's Barrick Gold. Invesco is buying Oppenheimer funds from Mass Mutual. Medtronic is acquiring Mazer Robotics. Adobe is buying software firm Marketo from PE firm Vista Partners. This was interesting. Marketo went public. Vista Partners bought them from, I think about $2.9 billion about 2.5 years ago. 2 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Adobe just bought them for, I think, 4.7. How do you like that?
Yeah, it bothers me. Actually, my next column in PC Magazine, which you're going to ask about to no avail, would have been about this deal. I don't like it.
I mean, Marketo is an automated marketing email campaign solution that can be plugged into all sorts of CRMs or used as a standalone basis. So for example, you get an email, you open it up, you don't do anything about it. You may get another, it will know, and you get another email saying, hey, we haven't heard from you. You don't open your email, they can know about that. So therefore you get that email, you open your email, you go click on something, you don't do something, they'll know that, they'll send you, you know, this whole giant marketing process.
Yeah.
That can be set up and organized through
that. It gets you to buy some vitamins.
Yeah. And then you say unsubscribe, but somehow that never happens.
Well, that never works with these scammers.
But 4.7 billion.
These guys are
billion.
Scammers, but yeah. It sounds to me as though this is not a good thing. Here's the problem I'm having. Adobe is showing signs of being flakes.
Ah.
If you look into this deal, this is apparently part of Adobe's idea to go after Salesforce.
That's stupid.
And Adobe, I don't know why Adobe got this hair up their ass, because it's a company that really specializes in products for the so-called creatives. And they pretty much have a corner on the market. And instead of putting their money into that and making it so they really are untouchable, they're now falling for the classic marketing trap of, well, let's throw our money at something other than the cash cow, because hell, we made the cash cow make so much money, this will make even more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got nothing to do with their core competencies or anything in between. I'm very skeptical of what Adobe's up to completely. I mean, I thought they were on the right track, and now I really doubt it. Reminds me of the small shop. You've seen these guys. The guy's got a pawn shop. The next thing you know, you go in there selling junk jewelry. Then a sign comes up for knife sharpened on Thursday. And then he's got toaster repair.
Right.
And then he's doing something else. I mean, it's the guy can't make up his mind what he wants to do because he sees somebody else making the money.
Right.
So he says, oh, that guy's making money selling moose heads. I'm going to do it.
Right. And then there's an underground restaurant on Friday nights.
Yeah. It's just, right. You know, this is what Adobe's doing.
Mm. Interesting.
Very bad sign.
Mm. Finally, in the mergers and deals, CEO, this you must have something to say about also, CEO Mark Benioff of Salesforce buys Time Magazine.
Yeah.
Is that I'm so jealous that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. What a great way and platform to get his, because I'm such a genius in the area of technology, I should be able to affect social change, and I'll do it through Time Magazine?
Well, Time Magazine is pretty much not a magazine anymore. It's a website. I mean, the way things are going, all these operations are, they lose money on the internet. They can't, you know, they don't have the same kind of leverage that you have in print and in other mechanisms. I don't know what he's thinking, to be honest about it.
I got it.
I think maybe his wife wanted it.
I have an epiphany. Do you know who really, really, really always wants to be the Time Man of the Year?
Yeah, he's going to name himself.
President Trump always wants to be Time Man of the Year, right?
Yeah.
Maybe this is the way that Salesforce believes they can keep him off it. Right?
Yeah, well, that would definitely work.
Yeah. Sears. Sears, remember them? Sears?
Yes, I believe they still have buildings.
They do. The CEO, Eddie Lampert, which was like, he was like the genius. He was like, Eddie Lampert, oh, this guy, he owns all the land. Remember that whole thing when Sears was like, oh, it's not about Sears, the land they own. And the value of the company was crazy, and Sears was just unbelievable. They want now creditors to restructure about $1.1 billion of debt due in 2019 and 2020, obviously hoping to avoid bankruptcy. And then finally, buybacks still rolling in. The S&P Dow Jones Industries announced preliminary results indicating that the S&P stock buybacks for the S&P 500 index for the companies within it totaled $190.6 billion for quarter two 2018, displacing the prior quarterly record of $189.1 billion that was set the previous quarter. There's a 58.7 increase from the same quarter in 2017. And don't tell me that the tax deal didn't push a lot more money into the coffers of companies, and what they're doing is, quote, enhancing shareholder value by doing share repurchases and dividend increases. So big numbers in that area.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Yep. Sure looks like it.
Mm-hmm. There's a link in the show notes for episode number 424 for the pot stocks. You can watch what's going on there. And since it gives you a list of the pot stocks, let's see right here, and how they changed since the first day we started just chatting about them. So we have the ETF, Alternative Harvest ETF, the MJ, is up 20.96% since 8/28. So 1 month.
Yeah.
And several names are up 20, 30, 40%. Gone crazy.
It seems to be a hot thing right now. Unfortunately, anything, I remember the 3D printer moment where it was, the stocks were all hot and heavy.
Yep.
And then one day, the rug was pulled out from under them because of one company, I think, didn't come in with the numbers that they were predicting, or something bad happened. And next thing you know, they're all in the toilet. I think they still are.
Yeah, they are. Definitely are. Yeah, I'm gonna call out to everyone's softer side right now and tell you that, you know, the sad story about John getting canned. Is it okay if I say canned?
It's fired.
Fired. Okay, was fired. Ooh, nah. But you don't get to collect any unemployment, do you?
No, I'm a contractor.
I'm just asking. So you know about this. And so now is the time of the show where we got to talk about donations. And more so than ever, we are in need of that because of the two parties here, one of them has lost part of his income.
Yes.
So seriously, we do ask you to donate. Sometimes you give, sometimes you don't. We're asking you to reach.
Well, I mean, I think if you don't get any good ideas from this show in terms of investments or investment strategies or just off the wall ideas, why are you even listening to the show? It doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. Unless you think that the two of us are just so entertaining. I mean, you heard Andrew's little bit earlier about, I forgot what it was about, but it wasn't funny. So we're not that good.
Yeah, so if you give us money, we can actually go to the official podcast training school for those incompetent and unfunny and uninteresting. Whatever.
Andrew needs to do some open mics.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Oh, little stand-up?
Put a hat, a fedora on the floor. There was some money in it, and see if people, you know, put some money in there.
That's essentially what we're doing right now, by the way. The hat is out.
Yes, I've noticed. We're putting our hat out.
The hat is out. So there's a couple of ways that you can give. First, you could give.
But I also want to say we do need the money to pay for the server.
Yeah, that is true. Server and developers is also a thing. The other thing is that if you want to buy a shirt, today's a pretty good day to do so. You know, for a shirt, is it worth $424 for a shirt? Meh, not really for a shirt. But it's not just a shirt. We're talking about a signed shirt by myself and John with the show number on it and all that. Collector's item, because we're not going to do this forever. We're not going to be selling these forever. But each show, the number of the show, this is 424, is the cost of the shirt. And seriously, we're asking you to dig deep. Go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the donate button. And if you're sitting there going, oh gosh, yeah. If you haven't donated ever, it's time to do so. You've gotten an idea here or there. You've gotten something out of this. Like John said, if you didn't, what the frick you listening for? So unless you have a real, you know, you just want to be bored to death or something. So there's something.
Oh, we're not boring.
No, it's not boring, but it, you know, got to put up with my stuff. You got to put up with my shoe issues at the airport.
Oh, the shoe issues. Yeah.
You know, I didn't even talk to you about people playing with their hair while we're eating dinner. I haven't even talked to you about that.
Where was this?
In general, people start scratching their head at dinner. Freaks me out.
Really?
Yeah.
You want people to wear hats?
I never realized how screwed up I was till we started doing the show, by the way.
You want people to wear hats at dinner so they don't scratch their heads?
No. I'm talking.
I got a pet peeve for you.
What's that?
So I call the kids out on doing this. So they do it. My wife does it constantly. And I started noticing my daughter picked up the habit. And I've seen other people do it at the table. It's where you're fuddling around. You got a bunch of – usually maybe you got some finger food and you got salt all over your fingers. And so then you extend your hands over the dish itself, the plate that you're eating from, and you rub the stuff off, like the flakes of pepper and whatever is stuck on your fingers. And you're going to do that over the plate so all the dirt from your fingers falls back onto the food. Have you ever seen this?
I think I've seen it, but I got to be honest with you. It's. I'm getting a little choky. I'm getting a little. Ugh, that's disgusting.
I'm just saying, keep an eye out for this bad habit.
I don't understand it. Why don't they just use a napkin?
I don't know what the deal is with this. I've seen it numerous times. A lot of people just don't notice it. Once you notice it once, which is the value of this show, by the way.
Yeah.
Once you notice these little picadillos once, you'll never forget them and you'll be seeing them all the time. And then you can start calling people out, which I think is what the point is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you also, I'm going on a cruise this weekend. We're doing a last minute quick cruise. And already I'm starting to figure out, I'm planning. I have a whole plan of action of when I may go in the pool or jacuzzi. It probably will have to be within the first several hours of the cruise. Because after that, I figure people are oiling it up and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. They're jumping in.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of gross. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm surprised there's not a scum across the top. You need one of those.
And then I'll jump in. I got that all over me. You with me?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go in one, period, not a public.
That's what I'm saying. Right in the beginning, I may go, but not. I don't want to talk about it.
And?
You're coming in and out. You there? Oh, John.
Yeah, yeah.
See, you got to pay for the servers. See, people, you got to go
pay
for the servers.
We're losing our connection because they're.
What happened to you? You're gone. Hello? Hello, John.
You can't hear me?
Now I can hear you.
I haven't touched anything. I don't know what happened.
All right. Real quick, just talk about this. We have some other things here that were leftovers, but I just want to talk about the Hindenburg Omen.
Okay.
Warnings from Wall Street are coming thick and fast as U.S. stocks sit near all-time highs. The latest known from Sundial Capital Research points to a controversial group of potential bearish technical signals known as the Hindenburg Omen. Deteriorating breath and share gains. And
I've heard of this thing once before and it didn't do anything.
Right. You have one and the stock market crashes, then everybody thinks it has to happen every single time. It basically is a reading where you have a technical pattern where individual stocks falling to a 52-week low is triggering a warning. And then this happened every single, there's a comparison of that and the McClellan oscillator. There's a few things that go into this calculation. And basically it's showing that if breadth is constrained, markets are still going up, but a lot of the stocks underneath that are falling to 52-week lows, and you have something with the McClellan oscillator or something else. This is a bad sign, which I would agree that individually all these things probably, there probably is a bad sign. It is a bad sign that if you have markets that are going up, but a lot of the stocks underneath the index are not. That means that if there's a break in any of the stocks that are holding it up, it's going to probably break hard. That makes sense. But next time we'll get
to... you've been warned.
Yeah, next time we'll get to the new Buy the Dip ETF and the James Biblically Responsible ETF as well. Last question before we get to the next thing. What is John C. Dvorak not writing for PC Magazine? All right, just move on.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. My concerns with Adobe suddenly wanting to compete with sales.
Are you going to continue writing but not publishing? Where'd you go?
I'll have another column for us next week that won't get written.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It's actually a lot easier.
It's so much easier. All right, let's get to the stocks. This is not anything more than a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security, not a solicitation of any form. We do this as just a way to have some fun, to look at some ideas that we have, look at some different theses, and some strategies that we may find interesting, patterns maybe, or fundamentals, news. It is something that if you decide for whatever reason to go along with, which we highly recommend against, you get financial advice from a professional. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own any of the securities that I mentioned, and we will duly recognize them and note that. You can track all these over on dhunplug.com under the weekly stock tips. There is an active page that shows what's on, what's off, what's winning, what's losing, what's in the portfolio, what's out, all that. So go check it out. Why don't you give us the rundown?
Yeah, looking at this thing, we got one, two, three, four, five kicked off the charts for bouncing around too much, and they all except the 420 stocks lost money. That made
keeps on going in and out. Yo,
a little bit wiped out.
Nope, in and out. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're kind of like there, then you're not there.
I'm here the whole time. I don't know why. I've got a gigabit going your way. It should be coming through loud and clear.
Maybe it's me. All right, keep going.
Okay, well, yeah, anyway, there's a bunch of stocks been kicked off, mostly yours.
The MJ, if we would have held MJ, if there was a higher MJ, the marijuana stocks, it would be up about 15% if it was held. Skechers,
not the way the game works.
Yeah, I know. The other ones are up good. Generac's up 16%. Actually, you know when I talked about the seasonality of Generac, how I found that there was some seasonal bias towards about the June time, and that's why I bought that season, this hurricane season there?
Yeah.
We actually found a really good seasonal bias through this app we used starting in about October. That's much more powerful for Generac. I thought that was interesting.
What?
Maybe that's because of post-hurricane season.
Whatever. Your Generac thing is the big winner on this thing.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
Everything else is just up a little bit. And I guess except for Boots, Walgreens Boots, which I bought back into, and it's almost up 10% already. So yeah. I'm a big fan of that company. And that's about it, except you got some new stuff. I have one stock I want to put on.
I have one stock, and I'm not quite sure about this, by the way.
Yeah.
When I say that is, it's a shot in the dark. It's a maybe. It's a low-price stock to begin with. It's only $11. The reason I'm saying this is because the thesis that, hey, if there are troubles in the municipal bond market, if maybe prices are going to go down on some of these, maybe we're going to have tomorrow the Fed is going to be coming out with a rate decision. Maybe there won't be as much issuance. Maybe municipalities are going to have to pay more money for bonds in the future, right? They're going to have to pay more higher interest rates. And their costs are going up. Maybe a company called MBIA, which is Municipal Bond Insurance Association, I believe is the full name. maybe they're going to have to start paying off, or there's going to be people that are worried about the fact that there is some risk in the municipal bond market. And oftentimes that takes this company down because they have to pay the claims on bonds that default.
So you're shorting them?
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But that assumes that this, you know, that the bond crash happens sometime in the near future.
That's correct. Before 10%.
Yeah. So I've got Associated Bank Corp.
What's the symbol?
ASB.
ASB. Associated Bank Corp.
The CEO and president has been buying, and he bought two batches of the stock. He almost sold out all his shares over the years. Selling, and now he's turned into a buyer. Hmm. So I figure that means something.
What's happening here? Why won't this work? Let me copy this. So this guy hasn't bought before?
No, he's been selling. He's been a net seller.
Oh.
He bought once back in June of 03. No, that's not the right date. Back in June, I got to look. Six one fifteen, and they bought some. Then he's been selling. Now he's buying. Just looking at his Form 4.
Okay, I got that. All right. Well, we got Associated Bank Corp. ASB is the symbol on the list. We'll have that updated tomorrow morning. Pronto, everybody, please do me a favor. If you're still listening, if you still hear us, if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, go over and donate over on DH Unplugged. Don't make me beg. Don't make us beg. We'd appreciate it. Listen to The Disciplined Investor this coming Sunday. And of course, John and Adam on No Agenda Thursdays at 12, Sundays at 12, where you get a full 3 hours of some crazy, incredible deconstruction of the news. And the good news is they have a lot of material to work with these days.
Writes itself.
A lot of material. So check it out over on noagendashow.com. And I will see you next week.
Okay, see you next week.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.